It's good to be with each of you this morning to worship together and encourage one another in this worship and edify one another. And I hope that this lesson will be a further source of edification for you this morning and encouragement as we seek to know God's will and live for Him. On last Sunday, we had a two-part study over the subject of a Christian's apparel. More specifically, we spoke about it in regard to how our apparel itself also will reflect the inward man in our transformation as disciples of Jesus. And I know it surprised you, but we didn't get through that study. And so we're going to intend to do that in this hour this morning. If you weren't here last Sunday, I would encourage you to go and listen to those lessons online. We'll do some review this morning, but by no means can we spend the time that it would take, as we did last Sunday, to cover these thoughts adequately. And it may be, too, that after the conclusion of this study, you still have some questions or confusion or whatever it may be. And I would assure you that by no means do I think that I have covered this in the best way. There are other sermons out there, I think, that are very beneficial. I could point you to as well, but also, you know, there's a lot to this, and we can just sit down and talk about it and study about it. And I encourage you to ask if you have any of those kinds of questions. In Romans chapter 12, the Apostle Paul has concluded his section of this great epistle on the gospel plan of salvation. The mercies of God has been disclosed by the inspired apostle. And so based on those mercies, he beseeches the brethren to present their bodies a living sacrifice, holy, acceptable to God, which is, he says, your reasonable service. Some translations have spiritual service or spiritual worship. He says, do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, that you may prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God. We pointed out a number of things in this, but I think it suffices for this morning to show that our bodies are included in spiritual service. The New English Bible translates verse 1, which is the worship offered by mind and heart. And so when we talk about modesty, it is a primary consideration of the heart. And I think it's right for us to stress that we don't lose sight and focus of the crux of the matter of modesty. It involves our inward man and our character. But he says that the worship of mind and heart, spiritual worship, involves a presentation of our bodies in a sacrificial way. And we demonstrated that our bodies are instruments, physical things that have been entrusted to us as stewards to use in spiritual ways as God has outlined in the pages of the New Testament. And one of those things is to use them in ways that are befitting, are right, are true, and are pure and noble according to God's standard, are modest. And we notice then that word transformed is actually a word that is used in the discussion of Jesus' transfiguration on the Mount. And when he was transfigured, when he was transformed to show who he actually was, as we see him as a man, he looks like any other man. But he's the Son of God, and that was primarily manifested in his glory that was disclosed in his morality and his righteousness and in his miraculous and divine abilities. But then they got a glimpse into a visual of the glory of God. And it says there in Mark 9:3 that his clothes became shining, exceedingly white like snow, such as no launderer on earth can whiten them. And so I think we can see by that our clothes say something about who we are, for good or bad. And so Jesus was not just transfigured in his face and in his physical body, but even the clothes that he wore changed to reflect who he actually was as a Son of God. And I think it's true for us as Christians. We need to change how we think, which will change how we act and how we carry about daily life in the body. And part of that change is going to be reflected in how we dress, what clothes we put on our body. And so if we're transformed to reflect the glory of God and to reflect godliness, the characteristic of one who is living to please God and seeking to do his will, certainly our clothes will show that as well. So we made sure we stressed that in the Bible we see, and we notice that in Romans 12 and verses 1 and 2, that discipleship is not merely an outward thing. It involves outward activity. It involves the use of our mortal bodies. It involves us going through various forms of worship and devotion, but it is coming from and must come from an inward renewal. And so Romans 12 and verses 1 through 2 really establish a biblical foundation for the rest of discipleship. As we're changed inwardly, it manifests outwardly. And in fact, the word conformed has a connotation of an outward show that is transient, ephemeral, and is not true to the inward. And so a Christian acting like the world is not outwardly agreeing with what they are to be and what they profess to be inwardly. But transformed is an outward change, an outward show that is true to the inward character. It is true to the inward being. And so a disciple is going to be changed by the will of God inwardly. And that is certainly going to manifest in spiritual service that has outward manifestations to it, including our dress. And so we notice that with modesty. It begins in the heart, but it finds its expression in outward apparel. And so we notice that in the very context of 1 Timothy chapter 2. And in verse 8, it speaks about the men praying everywhere, lifting up holy hands, he says, without wrath and doubting. Prayer is an outward thing, and the hands manifest an outward thing that they do. They stand for the activity and the conduct of a man. But holiness is the character inward that governs all of that. And so the wrath and doubting won't be inward of a man who is holy. And so there is an outward manifestation of something that has inward and deep roots in the soul. And so you see that in context with modesty. He speaks about women adorning themselves in apparel. That's outward. It's literal apparel, the physical clothes that you put on your body. But the description of that apparel is modest, which is an inward quality of the heart. And so it's translated good behavior in chapter 3 of 1 Timothy in verse 2. And so R.C. Trench comments on that word and says that it's the well-ordering that is not only of dress and demeanor, but of the inner life, uttering indeed and expressing itself in outward conversation. And so it's a well-orderedness of the inward man, but it finds expression outwardly. And in 1 Timothy 2, the exact context is a well-ordering of the inward that is manifesting itself in outward dress, in outward attire. The very clothes you wear say something about yourself. The very clothes you wear should reflect the godliness that we profess. And then we noticed as well in verse 9, that word translated propriety in the New King James Version is translated modesty in some other translations. And that's how Vine describes it, a sense of shame, modesty. He also says it's modesty which is fast or rooted in the character. And so it's a shamefastness, as the ASV translates it. And it's this inward character that is rooted in an honorable shame and holds fast to that. It is character rooted fast in that sense of shame. And so this is an inward thing. But if one is shamefast, has this modesty that is rooted in character, it will translate into an outward show. And so modesty fits the biblical foundation of an inward matter of the heart that is manifesting in an outward way. It's a well-ordering that is rooted in the inward man, transformed and renewed by God's will, that is then manifested in outward attire that fits the will of God. And so with that, we notice that modesty is going to pursue, namely, two main things. Firstly, modesty, a person that has modest character and therefore will dress in a way that reflects that modest character, will pursue God's favor. And that's really what we see in 1 Timothy chapter 2. He says that they adorn themselves in modest apparel, but he says, not with braided hair, gold or pearls or costly clothing, but which is proper for women professing godliness with good works. And so there's an emphasis there. He's not saying that it's wrong to wear jewelry or to do your hair up. He's saying that your main focus is not on your physical appearance. You're not worried about being seen by men to have some wealth and that being reflected in your clothes. You're not trying to gain attention from men in that regard. And certainly there would be a sexual connotation to that as well. I'm not trying to gain attention sexually by individuals within the world, but I'm trying to gain attention from God. I'm trying to be godly in my mindset. And we especially saw that in 1 Peter chapter 3, where it uses that not but sentence structure again, with wives winning their own husbands to the word by their conduct. And it says in verse 3, do not let your adornment be merely outward. Rather, verse 4, let it be the hidden person of the heart with the incorruptible beauty of a gentle and quiet spirit, which is very precious in the sight of God. And so I'm not seeking favor from men. I'm seeking favor from God. I'm seeking those words, well done, thy good and faithful servant. I've got that character, and I'm rooted in that character. And so my dress reflects that. And so it's not going to be the way society dresses to show wealth and status or sexuality. But it's going to show purity, chaste conduct, accompanied by fear of God, a profession of godliness. It's going to emphasize the spiritual values in Christ Jesus. And so that's joined as well with the pursuit of man's interest, not their favor, but their interest. And so you've heard us use the word modest before to describe humility. You praise someone for how good they did at something and they kind of shrink from that praise. And you say, well, you're just being modest. There's a modesty and humility. And so we understand it's inward. And so you notice in Philippians chapter 2, it speaks about being humble and seeking not your own interests, but the interests of others. And if we're seeking the interests of others, that's going to be manifested in modest dress as well. That would not lead another to impure and unchaste thoughts. In 1 Thessalonians 4, he speaks about the will of God being their sanctification, that they would abstain from sexual immorality. And we notice that that word is porneia, which has to do with fornication, any sexual activity outside of the marriage relationship. And we're going to talk a little bit more about that concept in a little bit with the last part of this lesson. But we notice there in verse 6, he says that no one should defraud, take advantage of and defraud his brother in this matter, because the Lord is the avenger of all such, as we also forewarned you and testified. He tells them to possess their bodies, their vessels, with sanctification and honor, that you wouldn't commit fornication and adultery and therefore defraud a brother. But we noticed how modesty plays a part in that. Our apparel plays a part in that. And I think we can understand that. And so where adultery can begin in the heart, we wouldn't want to defraud a brother by causing them to sin based on the actions we've taken. They'll be judged for their own actions. But if we're the cause for that stumbling, we'll be judged for that as well. And so we notice the inward out of modesty. But then we ask the question, is a standard, objective standard for biblical modesty a necessary reality? And we answered yes, because it denotes order, and there's no order without law. We also noted that it's a profession of godliness. And we noticed there in 1 Timothy chapter 3 that the mystery of godliness is the standard which produces godliness. And he's speaking about the gospel of Christ. And so the whole concept and context of 1 Timothy 2 demands that there be a standard in order to dress appropriately and therefore profess modesty and godliness. And we notice that that wasn't a standard of culture, but that this was actually counter-cultural. He was showing something that relates to what we read in Romans chapter 12, where they're not to be conformed to this world. As you are in Ephesus, Timothy, you tell them, you don't dress like the rest of the women dress. You don't dress like the rest of the people dress. Christians dress differently. It's countercultural, and it always has been, and it always will be. And so if we go into a discussion on modesty, and your first thought is, well, the world accepts this. It's not a big deal to the world. And so why should we make it a big deal? All that manifests is a corrupted conscience, a a tainted and seared conscience where we've grown insensitive to the shame of nakedness that is revealed within the pages of our Holy Scripture. It's not about culture. It's about what God says. And so we notice also that necessarily implied in modest dress is the covering of nakedness. He speaks about propriety, which means a sense of shame, being sensitive to the shame that would accompany sin. Here with clothing, the shame that would accompany the sin of immodest clothing especially has to do with the exposure of nakedness. I think we would all understand that. In Genesis chapter 3, God gave them clothing. And from the beginning then, we see the need of clothing and the whole purpose of clothing. The invention of clothing, if you will, was for the express purpose of covering nakedness. There may be other functions to it. It provides warmth, it provides protection, and all of those kinds of things. But the main function there was that they made clothes that were insufficient because they knew they were naked. And God gave them clothing that covered their nakedness. That's what clothing is for. It's not for style. It's not for making us feel better about ourselves. But ultimately, and there's nothing wrong with being stylish. That's not what I'm saying. But when we dress, our first thought should be, I want to cover what God has always intended to cover by the invention of clothing. And so the covering of nakedness is necessary in modest apparel. And so when we define what the Bible defines as nakedness, then we can define, therefore, necessarily what is modest apparel. And we notice that in Exodus 28, that the thigh was defined as nakedness. And so the thigh needs to be covered in order to be modest. We notice the Hebrew word there, yarek, means the thigh. And it comes from a root that means softness. And so the reason they use that word, which has a root about softness, is because the thigh is soft. And he's not articulating, Strong or any other lexicographer is not articulating a specific part of the thigh, but the entirety of the thigh. We notice especially that in Jacinius's Hebrew Chaldee lexicon, he defines that the thigh, and he says, perhaps so called from softness, see the root. And so he's just saying the thigh. Yarek meant the thigh. And the thigh is that which ranges from the hip down to the knee. We noticed in Isaiah chapter 47 that there is a different word used, but the nakedness of the leg, which elsewhere in Exodus 28 is defined as nakedness and therefore immodesty that must be covered, is the portion of the leg that is the thigh. We also noticed in Isaiah chapter 20, that the uncovered buttocks is naked. And while we may think that goes without saying, you see a problem with that in the world today. And then we notice lastly in Genesis chapter 3 and verse 21, when God gave them clothing that would sufficiently cover their nakedness, he gave them katanath, a tunic. And what we already understand about that is that it covered from the waist down to the knee, because we saw the uncovered thigh was nakedness and needed to be covered. And so we know at least that. But it is a long shirt-like garment, and our shirts hang down from our shoulders. We put a shirt on. So you think of a t-shirt. It's a long shirt-like garment. And it hung down from the shoulders to the knees. And with this, the authorities agree. But we don't even need to read those definitions. We know it's a long shirt-like garment. It's one piece of clothing. And it went all the way down to the knees. You put it on, it goes down to the knees. And so we see very clearly there, to the honest heart, that nakedness ranges from the shoulder down to the knee. And all of that must be covered. And we notice that the clothing given was given to Adam and to Eve, both. And so there's not a distinction between man and woman in the covering of nakedness. Well, we covered that, but what I want to do for the remainder of this lesson, and I assure you, I chose 9 a.m. because I didn't even have enough to go further into the 11 a.m. hour. So we'll get through this, I promise. Is the relationship between nakedness and therefore covering that in modest apparel and human sexuality and how that's confined to marriage. And what this does, if we're honest with ourselves and with the scripture, is that it covers everything and every person. It covers all situations. It covers all relationships outside of marriage. It gives us a further insight into the impropriety of exposed nakedness. And I think this is important because our youth are especially those who are faced with this kind of struggle. And I'm not saying they're the only ones. But I would suggest to you that our young ladies and our young men who are in the school age and growing up and getting into the community are faced with the struggle of conforming to the world or being transformed, and it has a lot to do with sexuality. And we'd be fooling ourselves if we denied that fact. This is a great struggle within the life of human beings, period. And modesty plays a great part of that. And so you fathers, especially with your daughters, and I'm speaking to myself, it's something I'm going to have to watch out with my daughters as they grow. We've got to have a line of communication open about sexuality. And I'm not saying that there's a specific way of addressing it. That's going to be a matter of judgment with the timing and the way that it's addressed. But I want to tell you, there's a lot of Christian young women that are in the church who dress in ways that are sexually provocative, and they have no idea that it is. I would suggest to you that the majority of our younger Christians that dress in ways that are immodest, they're not doing it. I know there may be a rebellious few out there. I don't think they're doing it because they want to attract sexual attention. I think a lot of our young ladies are just naive about it. And I think it's primarily up to the fathers to disclose to them how things work and what society, especially our society, is all about. And even Roman society back then is all about. And how all of this about our body that has a sexual connotation to it, because we're sexual creatures. We're made for procreation. We're made naturally with those sexual desires. But all of that is confined from the very beginning to the marriage relationship. And if there is a connection, and I think you would agree with me, between nakedness and sexuality, it is confined to the marriage relationship. And so it's not your body and your choice, as those in our country would use for a separate form of immorality and abomination. It is God's instrument for His service that He's entrusted to you. And it has a function of sexuality, but the only time that can function in a way that is appropriate is in the marriage relationship. That would include the exposure of nakedness and everything else that goes along with the sexual relationship. Notice in Hebrews 13 and verse 4, the Hebrew writer says, and I'm reading here from the New American Standard Bible, "Marriage is to be held in honor among all, and the marriage bed is to be undefiled. For fornicators and adulterers God will judge." I know that he's talking about the actual sexual activity here. In fact, bed is a euphemism for the sexual activity. Fornication is sexual activity, any of which is outside of marriage. And adultery is sexual activity with one who is married, but not to you. And so he's speaking about crossing that line. But I want to tell you that it is preserved, that purity in marriage, well before the sexual activity physically ever transpires. And it's interesting that he mentions fornication and adultery and not just one or the other. Because fornication mentioned in context with adultery, which itself is a form of fornication, manifests the distinction in timing, I think. And so fornication is any sexual activity outside of marriage. But when adultery is placed there, it's speaking of a situation where at least one of the two involved in that sexual activity are married. And so it's unlawful sexual activity that is happening after a person is married, but is outside of that specific marriage. Fornication then would stand for any sexual activity outside of marriage, period, including premarital sex, including homosexuality and bestiality. And so you have this idea of marriage being honored among all, not just when you are married, but before you get married. It would be a dishonor of marriage and God's appointment of marriage to have sexual relations with another before you're married or that person is married, and certainly when that person is not married to you. And I would suggest to you that modesty honors this. The marriage bed is representative of the sexual act, but everything that is associated with that sexual relationship up to and including the exposure of nakedness, which belongs only to the eyes of the one you're married to, is certainly having to do with honoring marriage. I want to cover that. It's only for my spouse. And I would suggest to you that when you uncover yourself to someone who is not your spouse, even if you're not married yet, you are betraying that kind of covenant that you're going to enter into in your future. And so that chastity and that purity, it happens well before you're married. But it's also in a provision and protection and honor of the marriage relationship and covenant. And parents, we need to teach our children this. We need to express it ourselves in our lives, but we need to teach our children this. From the range of dating to them choosing their daily clothes. Does it honor marriage? Does it protect and cover sexuality and preserve it for its greatest and most pure fulfillment according to God's design? Our bodies, brethren, have a sexual function. We got to be honest about that. What you expose in nakedness is a behavior of a sexual sort that is without propriety and certainly without moderation. And so immodesty has a lot to do with sexuality. Notice in 1 Corinthians chapter 6, he addressed the Corinthians who thought that because our bodies are sexual instruments in part, they have a sexual function, procreation. I must mean it's just like the food for the stomach and the stomach for the foods, and so I can just commit sexual immorality. But he explains the body is not for sexual immorality. And then he says it's for the Lord. And so if we understand our body is for the Lord, we're not going to do anything with our body outside of what the Lord has allowed. You notice there at the end of 1 Corinthians 6, he speaks about how your body is not your own, but you are bought at a price. Therefore, glorify God in your body and in your spirit, which are God's. And so the minute an individual suggests that it's my body and I can wear what I want, they're wrong from the very start. Because your sexuality is not yours to give at all until God's authorized it, because it's God's. God has blessed you with your body, and it's to be utilized in a way that is in accordance with his will. Notice in chapter 7 of that same epistle, the Apostle Paul speaks about a time of present distress, and he gives some judgment, but it has a lot of fundamental truths involved in that. You notice there in verse 8, he says, I say to the unmarried and to the widows, it is good for them if they remain even as I am, but if they cannot exercise self-control, let them marry. For it is better to marry than to burn with passion. I would suggest to you that part of burning with passion is the viewing of nakedness and the exposing of nakedness. And I would suggest to you that our very young women in the church who are naive about that concept in their clothing are surrounded by peers that know what they're doing. That's the difference. You've got a purity and an innocence, so to speak, within the mind of one who has been raised in the truth, who might not know what they're doing is wrong, but the world sees what they're doing, and they identify them with the rest who are immoral and immodest. And so what we've got to do is protect that innocence, not by turning a blind eye, but by explaining to them that your bodies have a sexual function and they're not meant to function sexually until you're married. And if you're uncovering your nakedness, certainly that's what is happening. Notice there in verse 2, he says, because of sexual immorality, let each man have his own wife and let each woman have her own husband. But let the husband render to the wife, his wife, the affection due her, and likewise also the wife to her husband. The wife does not have authority over her own body, but the husband does. And likewise, the husband does not have authority over his own body, but the wife does. You understand that concept of authority? Who has authority over your body before you're married to a husband or a wife? God does. And he still does in the marriage. But what he's done in the marriage relationship is granted that authority to the spouse because the sexual activity and fulfillment is authorized in marriage. And so you're not married. Or maybe you are. You don't expose your nakedness as defined in the Bible that we've done to anyone else but your spouse. And if you're not married, you don't expose your nakedness until you're married. That's the idea, because it doesn't belong to you. It belongs to the Lord, or it belongs to your future spouse. Notice in Proverbs 5 and in verse 15, a father speaking to his son in this book of wisdom. And he says this, drink water from your own cistern and running water from your own well. Should your fountains be dispersed abroad? streams of water in the streets, let them only be your own and not for strangers. Let your fountain be blessed and rejoice with the wife of your youth. As a loving deer and a graceful doe, let her breast satisfy you at all times and always be enraptured with her love. For why should you, my son, be enraptured by an immoral woman and be embraced in the arms of a seductress? And I would suggest to you that it goes on the other side as well. He's speaking to his son and he's saying, listen, don't go after anyone other than your wife. Why would you do that? Other places say that such a man is reduced to a crust of bread by the seduction of a harlot. Why would you reduce yourself to that? Why would you betray that covenant? Why would you go outside of what God has given you in the marriage relationship, but also with the woman? Why would you expose those very precious and special parts of yourself to anyone else who has not committed their lives to you, who aren't committed to God as you're committed to God? It is wildly inappropriate, and it's a betrayal not just of God, but of yourself. Do you understand that? And so modesty honors marriage because the body is only for the marriage relationship with its sexual function. We mentioned in a previous part of this lesson in Matthew chapter 5 how adultery can be committed in the heart. And I know that in Matthew 5, he's speaking about this man's responsibility to look away and to not have those sexual thoughts as he looks after another. But I want to tell you that it could be that the one that is being looked at has a part to play in this as well. And I've heard people say, well, you preach on modesty, but why don't you preach on the control of the sexual thoughts and urges of a man and him having that kind of self-restraint and looking away? That's not what modesty is about. That's another lesson, and we'll talk about that. We can talk about that. We're talking about what your clothes do to another person, man or woman. And so in Proverbs 7 and in verse 10, wisdom tells us that that harlot met the man in the attire of a harlot. And so you can dress in a way that is sexually provocative. And I think that that really goes without saying. I think we understand that. And so modesty in our preparation for a daily life and putting clothes on would protect against that kind of sex appeal. In Isaiah 3, their problem with their dress was not just being ostentatious, but it says that they walked about with wanton eyes. The New American Standard Bible says seductive eyes. I would suggest to you that that's why the world produces and sells clothing for women that is far different than for men. And it's more than just the tailoring to fit the form. It has a lot to do with the fact that men are visual creatures and they know sex sells. Something we need to teach our daughters to avoid that and be aware of that, to maintain that chastity, that purity, and that modesty. Remember in Genesis 2 how the man and wife were naked, but they were unashamed, and then they hid themselves. You remember in Genesis chapter 3 and in verse 10 when God said, "Where are you?" Adam said, "I heard your voice in the garden, and I was afraid because I was naked and hid myself." Did he hide himself from Eve or from God? And the point we glean from that is that the nakedness is okay to be exposed in marriage, but not in any other place, not outside of marriage. And so I want us to think very quickly and briefly about what we read in 1 Timothy chapter 2, some of the language there. He said that they adorn themselves in modest apparel with propriety and moderation. We notice that word propriety, eidos, is a sense of shame, modesty. But then moderation, Strong defines as soundness of mind, sanity, or self-control. Listen to what R.C. Trench in his Synonyms on the New Testament comments with on moderation and this relationship with propriety. He says, moderation is that habitual inner self-government with its constant rein on all the passions and desires, which would hinder the temptation to these passions and desires from arising, or at all events from arising in such strength as would overbear the checks and barriers which propriety or eidos or shamefastness opposed to it. What he's saying is that propriety is that kind of deep-rooted character in the heart that would shrink from anything God defines as shameful, including nakedness. But if that's not enough, you've got moderation to back it up and reinforce it to where there is a self-control and a wisdom and a judgment that goes into every decision we make, especially the clothing we put on, that would allow us to avoid dressing in a way which is without propriety, which is without shame, which would bring shame upon us because of the uncovering of nakedness and the sexual provocation. And so when he says to adorn yourself in modest apparel, it requires sound judgment. We've noticed very clearly what the Bible defines as nakedness from the shoulder down to the knee. That can't be disputed. The Bible's very clear about that. But when we get that, we also have to start having some sound judgments involved in that. And so when I go to dress, I'm making sure with my judgment as I'm trying to align myself with God's will, that from the shoulder down to the knee, my nakedness is covered. But then it goes beyond that to make sure that I'm guarding myself against immodesty in any situation. And so while I'm standing up, my shorts may be long enough, but what about when I sit down? When I'm standing up, my blouse may cover my cleavage, but what about when I bend over? Or maybe the material of my clothing, it covers from the shoulder to the knee, but it's see-through. And so moderation, sound judgment, would make the decision based on that it actually isn't functioning the way that it's supposed to function in covering nakedness. It's actually letting us peer through it into the nakedness. And you could even think about that when we're dressing with moderation, the tightness of clothes today. And I know there's judgment involved in this, but just think about this for a moment. If my clothing is to cover my nakedness, but it just appears as if something's painted on my skin, my nakedness is not being covered. I don't think that we would suggest that body paint is sufficient for clothing. But a lot of the things that people wear today is basically just that, body paint. The color has been changed, but you see the whole form. And if anything, it accentuates nakedness. I want us to think about this. There's a woman who wrote an article in New York Times. So she's not conservative. She's not thinking about spiritual things. She writes this in February. She's probably a feminist and fed up with trying to cater to men in the lives of women. And this is what she says. I want us to think about this. This is a woman of the world. We're to dress in moderation. This is what she says in her article titled, "Why Yoga Pants Are Bad for Women." She's not thinking about spiritually. She says this: "It's a new year and I've gotten a new gym membership. I went the other morning and it was 8 degrees outside and every woman in there was wearing skin tight saran wrap thin yoga pants. We've seen it all over." And she says, "Don't get me wrong, I have yoga pants, 3 pairs. She's not worried about dressing modestly. That's not her focus, but she knows something about this. She says, "For some reason, none of them cover my ankles. And as I said, it was 8 degrees outside. So I wore sweatpants and I got up on the elliptical," she says, "and a few women gave me funny looks. Maybe they felt sorry for me, or maybe they were concerned that my loose pants were going to get tangled in the machine's gears." She said, "Men didn't look at me at all." And then she makes the application. "We aren't wearing these workout clothes because they're cooler or more comfortable. We're wearing them because they're sexy." This is a woman of the world. She's not concerned with godliness. Her argument is based on, "I don't need to do anything for these men." But she realizes why men make those clothes for women and why women share those clothes with each other. Because some women crave that attention. She evidently doesn't. But the reason they're made the way they're made is to attract sexual attention. I want us to think about that for a moment. In Luke chapter 16 and verse 8, Jesus says that the sons of this world are more shrewd in their generation than the sons of light. I think that's true with the concept of clothing. We need to think about that. There's sex appeal in the clothing of today. And when we get dressed in the morning, our thought is not to attract sexually, but to profess godliness. We need to use sound judgment. I know that there's judgment involved in some of these things, but the Bible also tells us you can be sinful in your judgment. If you're wearing clothing that is sexually attractive, you're going to be sinning in doing that, provoking the thoughts of others that are never meant in the will of God to be had for you. And again, this applies both to men and to women. So men, you dress with moderation as well. You know, there was a time when I worked out a lot and I wanted people to see my muscles. And I can remember reasoning within myself about how my skin tight Under Armour shirt covered my nakedness. But you could see all parts of my upper body. I was wrong in dressing that way. I wasn't using sound judgment. I wasn't dressing with propriety and moderation. I was actually dressing to kind of find a loophole to actually show what I've got and have kind of a deniability that I'm dressing modestly. You know, some men wear these workout shirts that are cut off and the armholes are so big, it really doesn't cover anything. You see right through it. You know, if we want to, we can convince ourselves that what we're wearing is okay. But if we're seeking to please God, we're seeking His favor, and we're seeking to protect the spiritual interests of all those who would see us in what we're wearing, we're going to dress with propriety and we're going to dress with moderation. I hope that this lesson was beneficial to you. Again, if there's any questions, if we want to talk about this furthermore, I'm an open book. Let's do that. Let's talk about this. Because, brethren, it affects every congregation, including this one. It affects the life of every Christian, including you and including me. And we need to hold each other accountable and encourage one another to the purity that Christ died for. Before we dismiss to our classes, we'll be led in a word of closing prayer.